the original tarot is actually very rooted in imagery from the Catholic Church, which can obviously be very damaging to LGBTQ plus people. And so there's a lot that can be a hindrance to really becoming your fully empowered self.
My biggest worry leading up to it was actually that people are going to find the image sort of underwhelming. I was pleasantly surprised that just people were as excited about it as they were. And so that has been really gratifying to see everyone's just excitement.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Trump allows discrimination by doctors, time-honored tarot tells new tales, and queer astronomer stars in black hole breakthrough. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 4th, 2019.
Today we finalize new protections of conscience rights for physicians, pharmacists, nurses, teachers, students, and faith-based charities. They've been wanting to do that for a long time, right, Mike?
That's U.S. President Donald Trump during his May 2nd National Day of Prayer speech in the White House Rose Garden, and the mic he was addressing was anti-queer favorite Vice President Mike Pence. Trump's Department of Health and Human Services later confirmed that the new policy establishes so-called conscience rules for healthcare professionals, allowing them to refuse to treat someone based on their religious or moral beliefs. Critics are calling it a license to discriminate and believe that the targets of the new rules are LGBTQ people, such as transgender people seeking hormone therapy and a host of other medical services, and people with HIV and AIDS needing preventative and long-term care, as well as women seeking contraception or abortion services. A number of surveys have revealed that LGBTQ people, fearing discrimination, sometimes avoid seeking medical attention. Queer activists charge that the new policy only exacerbates the problem. The Human Rights Campaign's David Stacey said that everyone deserves access to medically necessary care and should never be turned away because of who they are or who they love.
Roger Severino, who heads up the Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights, insisted in a statement explaining the new rules that people do not have to shed their religious beliefs to participate in health care. Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi quickly criticized what she called the new bigoted rules as immoral, deeply discriminatory, and downright deadly. San Francisco City Attorney Dennis Herrera has already filed the first of what could be several lawsuits seeking to block the implementation of Trump's new conscience rules. Calling it reprehensible, Herrera said in a press release that this administration is willing to sacrifice patients' health and lives, particularly those of women, members of the LGBTQ community, and low-income families, to score right-wing political points. The Trump administration continued its assault on the health care of all Americans this week by filing a brief in a federal appeals court arguing that the entire Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, should be struck down as unconstitutional. Republicans, who claim to have a better health care plan in the wings, have yet to reveal any specifics.
The Equality Act, the latest legislative attempt to protect LGBTQ people from discrimination in the U.S., was approved this week by the House Judiciary Committee. It would add the categories of sexual orientation and gender identity to those already protected in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that includes race, gender, and a number of other characteristics. Advocates have already argued in several court cases that Title VII of the Act, which specifically bans bias on the basis of sex, also protects LGBTQ people. Many in the U.S. falsely believe that such protections already exist, and a recent poll by the nonpartisan Public Religion Research Institute found that close to 70% of respondents supported the idea of protecting LGBTQ people from discrimination. But the anti-queer hate group, American Family Association, called the measure the Pedophile Protection Act. The Equality Act outlaws anti-queer discrimination, including bias in employment, housing, and public accommodations. All the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee were in favor, while all the Republicans said no in the 22-10 vote. Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler of New York expressed his strong support. It is time that the federal government recognizes that discrimination in any form is wrong, he said. And we should move forward with these common sense protections that simply build on existing statutes. The bill also has the enthusiastic backing of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. While the Equality Act is eventually expected to pass in the full House, controlled by Democrats, the Senate's Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is not likely to even allow a vote on it in his chamber.
The man described as the Donald Trump of the tropics and considered to be one of Trump's strongest allies, Brazil's self-identified, proudly homophobic President Jair Bolsonaro, has told LGBTQ tourists to go someplace else. "We can't be known as a paradise for the gay world," he said during a meeting with reporters at the end of April. "Brazil can't be a country of gay tourism. We have families," he added. While actual numbers are elusive about how much revenue queer tourism generates for Brazil, millions flock to Sao Paulo for the city's annual LGBTQ Pride Parade, which some believe is the largest in the world, and to Rio de Janeiro's queer-friendly Carnival. Alfredo Lopez of the Brazilian Association of Hotels told Reuters that Bolsonaro's comments are going to have an impact. Proudly out British performer and activist Stephen Fry actually interviewed Bolsonaro in 2013, during which the president-to-be complained about homosexual fundamentalists brainwashing children and asserted that Brazilians don't like homosexuals. Fry later called it one of the most chilling confrontations I've had with a human being. Bolsonaro has claimed that he would prefer his child to die in an accident than be gay. He's also said that the government should not pay for antiretroviral drugs for people with HIV/AIDS. David Miranda, a longtime Brazilian queer activist, described Bolsonaro as a national disgrace. "He is staining the image of our country in every imaginable way," he said, adding that, "You can be certain that we will resist, and we will resist in the streets."
In other news, the United Methodist Church's Judicial Council has endorsed the anti-queer policies enacted by delegates to the denomination's General Conference in February. The Judicial Council action on April 26th maintains the church's ban on the ordination of self-avowed homosexuals and its opposition to marriage equality. Penalties now specified for United Methodist clergy who officiate weddings of same-gender couples range from suspension to expulsion. Congregations that don't approve of the traditional plan approved at the General Conference and confirmed by the Judicial Council can leave the denomination if two-thirds of its members vote to do so and if certain financial obligations are met. Pro-queer forces in the church, led by the group Reconciling Ministries, have vowed to stay in the church and continue to fight for reform. And a group of teens at the First United Methodist Church in Omaha, Nebraska, who had spent more than a year preparing for their confirmation and to take a formal vow of membership in the church, announced in a joint letter read to the congregation during what was supposed to be their confirmation service on April 28th, that they were postponing the action.
"We want to be clear that while we love our congregation, we believe that the United Methodist policies on LGBTQ+ clergy and same-sex marriage are immoral. Depending on how this church responds to the General Conference action, we will decide at a later time whether or not we want to become officially confirmed. But until then, we will continue to stand up against the unjust actions that the denomination is taking."
The United Methodist Church is the third largest Christian denomination in the United States, behind the Roman Catholic Church and the Southern Baptist Convention.
10 transgender women from Central America who were part of Donald Trump's dreaded caravan of refugees seeking a better life late last year have been granted asylum in the United States. A Honduran immigrant named Estrelita told CBS News that, "I love my country and wouldn't have left but for the persecution I suffered as a trans person." She was part of a smaller contingent of about 80 LGBTQ people who split off from the major caravan because of anti-queer attitudes that surrounded them. Things didn't get much better when they reached the Mexican border town of Tijuana, where they faced hostility from local residents, and at the South Texas Detention Center, which wasn't prepared for transgender detainees. As The Advocate reports, Estrelita knows she's one of the lucky ones. She plans on opening a women's shelter once she's settled in the U.S. According to immigration activists, the rest of the transgender women in the detention center are either still awaiting court dates or have already lost their asylum cases.
And finally, according to Gay Star News, almost 700,000 LGBTQ people in the U.S. have undergone so-called conversion therapy that falsely promises to make them straight, and about half of them were teenagers. Queer young people were supported in an unexpected way at the widely televised Billboard Music Awards in Las Vegas on May 1st by ally Dan Reynolds, lead singer of top rock artist winners Imagine Dragons, during his acceptance speech.
I just want to take this moment to say there are still 34 states that have no laws banning conversion therapy. 34. And on top of that, 58% of our LGBTQ population live in those states. This can change, but it's going to take all of us talking to our state legislation, pushing forward laws to protect our LGBTQ youth. And lastly, I just want to say, we have seen with conversion therapy that our LGBTQ youth have double the rate of depression, triple the rate of suicide after conversion therapy. It's not working, needs to change. Thank you, guys.
Imagine Dragons lead singer, Dan Reynolds.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending May 4th, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast.
And now you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as the gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed. It is about the echoes in the culture of who we are or who we aren't. Hi, I'm Clive Barker. Listen to This Way Out.
There are a lot of great queer astronomers out there, but in particularly in sort of my niche of astronomy, which is particularly radio astronomy, I would say we're a little behind the curve in a lot of ways.
There's plenty of space for queer astronomers later in the program. Is queer liberation in the cards? Dixie Trichel and John Townsend of Fresh Fruit on KFAI Minneapolis-St. Paul got a reading from Cassandra Snow, author of Queering the Tarot.
Who can say where the road goes, where the day flows, only time? And who can say?
Tell us a little bit about your background as a tarot reader and how you got to writing this book.
Yeah, so I've been reading tarot in general for about a decade and a half, and about a decade ago I started reading professionally, and about 6 or 7 years ago I started reading and teaching full-time. I do theater as well, but reading and teaching and writing, primarily about tarot, were the main things. It was actually through the now defunct online newspaper, The Column, that I started writing a Queering the Tarot series that got picked up by Little Red Tarot over in the UK, which is a huge tarot site, especially for queer people and femme people who like wanted alternatives to tarot and spirituality. I honestly got really lucky. The right person at Wiser Red Wheel was reading at Little Red Tarot and thought that Queering the Tarot made a lot of sense as its own book. I rewrote everything I wrote probably the first 2 years I was doing it. And the rewriting goals were to make it more expanded. So I go into it a little bit more detail. And there's more personal stories than there were in the column. And then I wanted it to read as a cohesive book. I wanted it to be like a journey of the tarot and not just standalone articles.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about why a queer tarot versus a traditional tarot.
That is a really great question, and it is one I get asked a lot. Mm-hmm. My answer changes a little each time, too, the more I explore sort of that topic at hand myself. When I learned tarot, it was a breath of fresh air. It was kind of a saving grace. I was going through a really traumatic time, and it put so much into perspective. as I started doing it for other people in my community and my sort of chosen family, we found as we worked through it together that a lot of the cards actually had a lot of obstacles to understanding them. The original tarot was actually very rooted in imagery from the Catholic Church, which can obviously be very damaging to LGBTQ plus people. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of hierarchy within the tarot. There's a system in it called the court cards, which is like king and queen. And, you know, and so there's a lot that can be a hindrance to really becoming your fully empowered self. And so I wanted to explore what deconstructing and rebuilding that looked like. And I also wanted to explore how we could all, regardless of gender, take on some of that energy for ourselves. And then I think the other big thing is everyone's life looks different, but I think that's especially true when you're marginalized in any way. Mm-hmm. And the tarot was obviously very well intentioned, and I obviously love it a lot, but it does assume a certain journey from sort of birth to death that mm-hmm. I think most people that I know and work with and live with and love can't necessarily connect with.
Mm-hmm. What deck do you use when you read?
I actually use several decks. I sort of favor indie decks because I think that's where some really innovative interpretations and artwork are happening. There's a Numinous Tarot, which is an online buddy of mine in Seattle, made this really beautiful, genderqueer, colorful deck that I think is really uplifting compared to a lot of LGBTQ narratives that we see mm-hmm. in anything but tarot as well. I love the Next World Tarot by Christy C. Rode. If anyone is a big punk music fan, they might recognize that name. But she does a lot of really provocative art and has a very like punk, post-apocalyptic, queer rebuilding mm-hmm. deck. I do, you know, I've been reading with a very traditional, almost Victorian themed one called the Spiral Tarot for a long time. And a lot of my queering the tarot is sort of like finding a happy medium between those really traditional decks that I learned on and love mm-hmm. and then these newer decks. I'm going to read an excerpt that introduces the Suit of Wands. When originally queering the wands, one of the biggest things I noticed was that often the thing a queer seeker is most passionate about is their queer identity itself. It took so long to find, live, and grow as yourself that your own queerness has become a brilliant bonfire that attracts only the best to sit within its light. Beyond that, though, it is a strange but wonderful fact that most queer people find themselves in activist or advocacy roles in their life, and that's where the true fire rages. Our identities and our right to live and express them are the things we find ourselves fighting for with unmatched fervor and commitment. Over time, that fervor becomes about all of us, not just ourselves or our loved ones. Queer activism keeps us tirelessly fighting. Queer community is where we fall when we do get tired. These are the things we work through our fatigue to build and protect. These are the things we work ceaselessly to ensure that all queer people who come after us have. There are no words for the way many queer people approach their life as accidental activists except the ones we ascribe to the wands. Determination, fire, and passion. You should be able to get Queering the Tarot anywhere that you buy books, but certainly occult shops or any LGBTQ-specific shops that carry books.
Is there a website people could go to?
Cassandra-Snow.com.
Cassandra Snow, thanks a lot. Queering the Tarot sounds like a fascinating book.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thank you, John Townsend and Dixie Trichel, for that divinatory conversation.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out. That was without cue cards, people.
Black hole, a region in space where gravity is so strong nothing can escape. Black hole, you know that place where matter is squeezed in a tiny space. Black hole, a region in space where stars collapse and fade away. Black hole, you know that place where matter disappears without a trace.
This Way Out's Christopher Gall introduces us to a gay astronomer who did not disappear inside a black hole.
A few weeks ago, the front page news was the unveiling of the first ever image of a black hole from the Event Horizon Telescope. The picture shows the black hole at the center of the M87 galaxy, over 55 million light years away. It was the product of data collected from 8 specially equipped telescopes around the world, with over 200 astronomers working together over the course of more than 2 years. One of those astronomers was Andrew Shale. He's a PhD candidate from Harvard University and is listed on the Astronomy Outlist and mentors fellow LGBTQ students. He joins us on This Way Out from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
What was your role in the now iconic image of the black hole that we've all seen?
One of the big things I've been working with has been the imaging side. So basically, we get data from these 8 different telescopes all around the world. It's not like a normal telescope where you just can take a picture. You have to combine the different data that you get into an image. And that's actually a very difficult problem, because basically, you can sort of imagine it like we have a whole Earth-sized telescope, and we've blacked out most of the mirror, and we're only getting data at a few points. And so what we do in the imaging team is work on algorithms and computer software to stitch that data into an image to best guess what we would see if we had a full mirror that was the whole size of the Earth. Techniques for stitching the data together from all these telescopes have been in use in astronomy since the 60s or 70s when these methods were first invented, but we're making a lot of progress in the last few years with DHT in drawing on techniques from computer science and using sort of these new eyes on this problem, using related algorithms and software from computer vision, from, you know, medical imaging, and from all the interesting computer vision problems that can go into things like in your phone. And we have tried to draw them into our work as well. I think we're making a lot of progress that way.
What sparked your interest in astronomy? How did you end up eventually joining the EHT project?
So astronomy in the first place, I just remember having this big book when I was a kid that was a Hubble Space Telescope coffee table book that my parents had, and just looking at those pictures. So I think that was what first sparked my interest in the first place, and then just read a lot and loved science classes growing up. But I didn't think I was going to be a scientist, actually, for a long time. My parents were both scientists, so I was very much insistent that I was going to do something different. But then getting to college and just being at a place where I, you know, was taking one physics class, and I was basically like, this is going to be the last physics class I take before I settle down and keep doing the other stuff I loved, which in that time was history. But I just couldn't stop. And so getting to go to some telescopes, and especially one in Australia, and like getting to sit behind the control panel of that telescope was like, I think, really the moment where I was like, this is what I definitely want to do. There was something just like really special about being in that place where the signals from space were coming in and you were the only one sort of watching them.
The image of M87 is an astonishing scientific achievement, and it's really captured the public's imagination more than any other scientific or astronomical achievements, at least lately. And it's, you know, it's big news. It's been on the front page.
Yeah.
How has your life changed since the big reveal on April 10th?
Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride, I think, not just for me, for a lot of people in this collaboration. My biggest worry leading up to it was actually that people were going to find the image sort of underwhelming. And I think there were a few people who did at first, but that fortunately, I was pleasantly surprised that just people were as excited about it as they were. And so that has been really gratifying to see everyone's just excitement.
I'm Christopher Gall. My guest is astronomer Andrew Shale from the Event Horizon Telescope. Do you feel there's an underrepresentation of LGBTQ people in the field?
I would say that yes, certainly in all sciences. I think science and astronomy is working to change that. I think there are a lot of great queer astronomers out there, but in particularly in sort of my niche of astronomy, which is particularly radio astronomy, I would say we're a little behind the curve in a lot of ways. That radio astronomy sort of grew out of more like military and radar technologies in the 1940s, and has sort of continued with that sort of culture, which is a little different than optical astronomy that a lot of people might be more familiar with. And so I would say it's taken a little longer even for a fuller representation of people to work its way into radio astronomy. I think there are a lot of great people in our collaboration that are working to change that, which I'm really excited to be a part of.
Has it been your experience that there are different generational attitudes?
You can feel like, and I know I felt like this when I came into academia, or to astronomy, that everything feels very hierarchical, and the people at the top, you know, have been there for a long time. They know exactly what they're doing. You can't do anything without their, you know, permission or understanding exactly how they got to that place. But really, I think most people, I think everyone learns this as they go through graduate school in some way or the other, is that like you really are the expert in your stuff and your science, and like you're the one who can get up there with the most senior people in your field and talk about what you know. And I think that applies to being out in the workplace or to being LGBTQ as well, is that like, if you model that for these people, they are going to, if they're good scientists, which most of them are, they will, you know, absorb that into their body of knowledge and move on. You'll have educated someone and you'll have made the, you'll have made astronomy and science a safer, more welcoming place for the people who come after you. And so that's what I'm trying to do. And I think I've seen many of the people I admire most doing as well. And one of the best things about astronomy is that it's a really global field. And like, if you become an astronomer, you're going to like get to travel all over the world and go to different telescopes and meet tons of different people and have this really tight network of people from all different backgrounds all across the world. And the exciting thing to me is that it's building up that diversity in the astronomy community even more. And I think that's happening at a much faster pace now. And I think we need to work really hard in the US at doing that as well as bringing more and more gender diversity, racial diversity, gender identity and sexuality diversity into the field.
For the stargazing LGBTQ kids who are listening, who may be inclined to become radio astronomers, what advice would you offer?
It's important to know that there are LGBT and queer people in every field of astronomy, and that the best thing that we can do is to be out and be visible, because I think most astronomers are progressive, interesting, scientific people who don't harbor, you know, any sort of extreme bias. They're just in a culture that hasn't changed in a long time. And so I think by representing your full self and being out and queer in this community, you inspire other people to bring that full self to their work as well. And I think, you know, one thing that I've been surprised by in just the last few weeks is how many people in my field who I, you know, might have thought maybe they were LGBTQ or queer, but didn't know for sure, they came out and said to me, like, you know, that's the most positive thing I can hope that this whole experience does, is that it breaks some of those last barriers where people just feel like I can bring that, my full self to this work and be respected by my colleagues and continue doing the great science that I've been doing just with my whole self there.
Andrew, thanks so much for joining us on This Way Out.
Thank you so much.
Andrew Shale was on the team of astronomers at the Event Horizon Telescope who produced the first ever image of a black hole. He spoke to us from Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'm Christopher Gall for This Way Out.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Sarah Sweeney and Christopher Gall, produced with Brian DeShazer, and feature material from Dixie Trichel and John Townsend, and from Christopher Gall. Some of the music you heard came from Enya and Silly School Songs, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Paul Bannon, Richard Merck, and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio on AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KTAL Las Cruces, New Mexico, BCFM Bristol, England, WRFZ Rochester, New York, and some 200 stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Y'all stay tuned.